As many of you may know, women's health care has been characterized as fragmented because women often see different providers for primary reproductive and non-reproductive health services. As such, obstetrician gynecologists are important primary care providers for women, with 44% of women estimated to see two or more providers for primary care, often a generalist and an OBGYN. In fact, legislation requires that insurers allow women direct access to OBGYNs because women really want this access and have fought for that and successfully. Additionally, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology submits opinions that influence healthcare delivery for women. And an example of that is their recent primary and preventive care periodic assessments opinion. The annual examination is a central feature of women's primary reproductive health care, established in part by the clear benefits of routine preventive Pap testing for preventing cervical cancer. Starting in 2002 and 2003, new evidence-based recommendations were released that indicated that testing could begin later, within 3 years of intercourse or by age 21, and could be extended to every 3 years with three normal screens after age 30. More recent guideline changes have shifted toward even less screening to target ages of greatest risk and reduce harms from over-treatment, such as heightened risk of preterm birth. And currently, annual well woman visits are being redefined after the ACA passed, with new clinical preventive services for women guidelines suggesting that well woman visits are recommended and should be covered, and that those visits could occur through multiple visits. So they are sort of indoctrinating this concept that women might need to see two providers for their primary health care. But as we see that Pap tests are no longer needed on a yearly basis, what about routine pelvic examinations, which are potentially part of that yearly visit, but not necessarily? In a recent commentary considering recent evidence guidelines, Dr. Westhoff and colleagues suggested that women without symptoms or special risk factors don't need routine pelvic examinations, especially if they aren't needing a Pap test on a yearly basis. Even prior to this, others had questioned the value and purpose of routine pelvic examinations because, for one, there's a D rating for ovarian cancer screening from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, suggesting that there is no benefit and, in fact, can be harms from over-detection of non-problematic lesions. Also, urine-based testing is available for STIs that are recommended for women 25 and younger. There's no evidence of clinical benefit that's been established, or harms for that matter. And it also, as a point of access, may hinder contraceptive care and other preventive services that are limited because women have to have this exam before they are permitted to have their contraceptive pills. And that's been established in other research in this area. It also takes up valuable clinical time that could be devoted to services that we do have good evidence for a benefit from. So what do currently practicing OBGYNs think about such arguments and about the shifting women's primary health care issues that arise with longer intervals between Pap tests? To answer this question, we conducted a national survey of obstetrician gynecologists using a simple random sample of practicing clinicians from the American Medical Association's Physician Master File. We sent them $10 with a survey, sort of guilting them into participating in our study, and many responded, and some even sent the $10 back if they, for some reason, thought they weren't eligible. So it was a very good protocol that we followed based on evidence on how to survey providers and get the best response rate possible. They were sent a second survey and also a follow-up postcard as well. And we got a response rate of 62% with 521 physicians in our sample. And they were similar to non-respondents, but slightly younger. So essentially older clinicians were less likely to respond than younger ones. So the attributes of our sample are generally reflective of the current national data on practicing OBGYNs. And in terms of practice characteristics, that's also the case. Two-thirds of our sample conduct 30 or more gynecological exams per week. And there was a range of reported proportion of patients using public insurance, with half of the providers having fewer than a quarter of their patients with some sort of public insurance, such as Medicaid, or Medicare. So those would be clinicians serving a higher income bracket generally. So in terms of results, we asked them to define what a gynecologic examination includes, because at the time there wasn't a clear definition. More recently, ACOG has released a definition, but we wanted to make sure that we were asking them questions about this exam and we were all talking about the same thing, or that we could at least describe what we were speaking about. 98% included a bimanual pelvic examination in their definition of the gynecologic examination, with or without a rectal examination. 94% also included speculum examination, but a quarter actually wrote in other non-pelvic general health screens, mainly the clinical breast exam as part of the annual examination. And in hindsight, it might have been good to add some other options for people, because it would be, I'm not sure, people who may consider that part of the exam might not have filled it in, but just didn't have the option. So that may be an underestimate, I guess is my point there. In terms of their views of the importance of the gynecological exam, and we asked the question in such a way that we were suggesting that these women are coming in without needing a pap test, so just a gynecologic exam, independent of that. Very few thought that women needed to have a gynecologic exam before they were sexually active. But a majority thought that it was very important for women to have annually in their reproductive years, and slightly fewer, but still a majority annually after menopause. We then asked what they thought would be the consequence of extending the interval from yearly to every 3 years for patient satisfaction, patient health and well-being, and contraceptive provision. And as you can see, they thought that this would be problematic for all of these factors, especially patient satisfaction and patient health and well-being. Actually, they're all pretty similar. So similar levels of concern about that. We then asked what they thought would be the consequence for some aspects of their own practice. They thought visit length would increase, which makes sense because you would need more time if you didn't see them as often. Clinic volume would go down considerably, especially if you aren't conducting 30 exams a week anymore. You're conducting 10 or whatever from what the baseline is right now. And accordingly, financial reimbursement would be expected to decrease. So those all make sense, what you would expect. But interestingly, about half thought that it would not affect their job satisfaction at all, like they wouldn't really be feeling that their job was worse or better. It was just no effect. But almost half thought that it would decrease their job satisfaction. They wouldn't feel that they were maybe in contact with their patients as often. So we wanted to look at this in a multivariable. Almost half thought that it would decrease their job satisfaction. They wouldn't feel that they were maybe in contact with their patients as often. But among the predictors of the factors that related to decreases in patient health being expected with seeing your patients less frequently, being a slightly older clinician was associated with decreased patient health being a concern. So this would be thinking that if I don't see my patient every year, they're going to get cancer, something is going to be missed, it's a problem for patient health. And also the practice setting had an influence as well, which was that clinicians in academic centers or hospital or clinic settings were less likely to be concerned about it decreasing patient health. And also there was a regional effect where Northeast clinicians, those located in the Northeast, were more likely to be concerned with this. Now, with regard to patient satisfaction, interestingly, provider gender had a strong effect, with female providers being twice as likely as male providers to think that a longer interval would decrease patient satisfaction. And those at hospital and clinics less likely to be concerned with this to a similar degree. Also, clinicians serving fewer public insurance patients were more likely to be concerned with decreased patient satisfaction. So if you have sort of a higher-end clientele, I would say you're more concerned that your patients are going to be upset about this change. They're going to be dissatisfied with that, and that's how I would say it in more lay terms. So just to summarize this a little bit, OBGYNs consider yearly gynecologic examinations very important, regardless of pap test intervals. And those recommendations, based on some other analyses of these data that are forthcoming in a publication, clinicians aren't all aware of these new PAP test intervals or aren't practicing those evidence-based guidelines, but many of them are, and consider yearly examinations important even when a patient clearly doesn't need a PAP test. Younger OBGYNs are less likely to be concerned about declines in patient health and satisfaction with a three-year interval, possibly because they are more up-to-date on recent guidelines due to their clinical training being more recent. That's a theory that would need to be tested further, but that's how I would interpret that finding. The finding on female OBGYNs, I think, is notable because we know that many women prefer seeing a female provider for their reproductive health care and value contact with a reproductive specialist on a regular basis for contraceptive care and for other sexual and reproductive health concerns. And I suspect female OBGYNs are very aware of the role they have in being a source that women go to, especially if they have a primary care doctor who's a male provider, that they know that they're a point of contact that's important to women and that women will be upset if they don't have that regularity. And I think it really raises an important issue about changes to GYN exam intervals and to gynecological exam intervals and how we need to find ways to reimburse visits if women want them on a yearly basis to their OBGYN, but that they don't necessarily need to include a pelvic examination. And I think that's the pelvic examination is a way to be financially reimbursed for this point of contact. And the annual exam is so defined by the pelvic examination, but could be defined in some other way and perhaps needs to be. And interestingly, there was a recent new committee opinion from the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology that defined the pelvic exam a little bit more clearly in the annual gynecologic exam, and again said that women should have a well-woman appointment with their doctor every year that includes pelvic and breast examinations. But interestingly, they acknowledge that there isn't a lot of hard evidence for examinations in symptom-free women. Women can discuss with their doctors whether or not they want one. And I think this is an interesting way to come out with an opinion about a preventive screening examination. And I am interested in how these discussions might be facilitated by providers who currently are very strongly wedded to the notion that women should have an examination every single year. So whether clinicians are now going to start saying, well, do you really want a pelvic examination at this visit? And whether women will say, well, do I need one? And what the answer to that question will be from doctors who, you know, have varying views about the importance of the examination. So I think there's a lot of work to be done as women's well visits are being redefined about how the pelvic examination fits into the annual well woman visit and whether or not it's even needed. So I'm happy to take questions. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Situations where they're in partners, so now they're in group risk, and all other things in midlife. So, I mean, I think it's a complicated question that's not completely answered by whether or not someone can help with the family path. And so, I think it's important to talk about this, but I don't think it's reimbursement. I think that's kind of simplified.
I don't think there's a good way to reimburse for these important things you're talking about, though. Like a pelvic exam, you can mark off as you did the gynecologic examination, whereas talking to a woman about bone health or talking to her about her sexual risk factors, there's not currently a good way to get reimbursed for that at the level that you would want for the time you're taking clinically. So I think that's where, I think there may be more pelvic examinations being conducted because it's a mechanism for keeping that continuity of care that's so important that women want in women's health care. So I totally agree with you that that continuity of care with a reproductive specialist is very important to maintain.
And there are other things, I mean,
but not necessarily including a pelvic examination in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if ACOG's recommendation now is that doctors discuss with their patients whether they want them or not. I think we need a little bit more guidance on whether they're valuable. Like, a woman probably isn't going to want it if it doesn't hold a clinical benefit. I mean, why would she?
Well, I guess the problem is the clinical benefit is defined. And, you know, and that's not what the study is looking at. So there are things that are identified during that visit that could, you know, whether it's a cyst or whether it's a problem on the cervix or whether it's a vulvar lesion. You know, so there's a number of things. Pieces that I would take away from this, the person has had no symptoms, they're 60 years old, they had an atrophic exam, and it's very painful, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there are definitely women for whom this is a relief because they've been torturing themselves under the audience exam,
yeah.
And they have to do it for their cancer, but for other women, it's not
that. Yeah.
But I think the value of being able to have the patient and doctor jointly decide, and for the incentive to no longer be perverse in terms of payment,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think everything you're saying is true, which is we need to be able to give more tools so that whatever's decided needs to be happening in that appointment is paid for,
mm-hmm.
because it is really valuable for that woman's health. I mean,
right.
The other issue I'd
right.
like to see reimbursed in that conversation with the OB-GYN is issues of domestic.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
things like that should be reversed,
mm-hmm.
Because that's about the woman's safety again.
Mm-hmm.